Chapter 5. "This has to stop," Jates growled. No, not a growl, Dave Chaika told himself. That was just the way the Verd soldier talked. Jates was now a Sergeant, a non-commissioned rank roughly equivalent to a NATO code OR-8, a first sergeant in U.S. Army terms. Although the structure of the Verd Chris military was different from any modern human military organization. Of course it was different, they were aliens. The Verds and UNDIC had gone through an exercise to map the alien rank structure to the NATO standard that was the DEFCOM default. But the best that could be done was a frustrated, close enough. All Dave knew was that Jates outranked any level Dave had achieved before he quit the U.S. Army, which made the current situation ironic, since Jates' unit was assigned to the private security company Dave owned. Technically, Dave was the Verd's boss. Dave certainly had no intention of reminding the hulking lizard of that fact. "I hear you," he muttered, not knowing what else to say.
"Do you?"
Jates loomed over Dave in the shipping container that was the company office. Since the air conditioning unit worked only half the time, Dave would have preferred a tent, but he had paid an outrageous fee to have the container shipped all the way from Earth, then brought down to the surface. He also paid a hefty fee to a contractor to fix the AC unit, but the damned thing only worked for a few days before breaking again. The whole reason for having a container was not for any practical purpose, but something called optics. An influential company like his needed to have a highly visible, prominent presence dirtside. Supposedly, according to the marketing firm he had hired. Next time, he would set up his company offices in a tent and ignore the optics.
"I do. Do you understand me?"
That time, the Verd definitely growled. Deliberately. It would have been intimidating if Jates and Dave didn't have a history that... Forget that. It was intimidating.
"I understand, Sergeant. There isn't anything I can do about it." "You have..."
"Anything I do will only make the situation worse, you know that."
"Your wife..."
"She can't do anything either. Her hands are tied by the treaty."
"I'm sorry, but your people got themselves into this mess. We're just doing cleanup on Io 3 here." "We are not doing anything," Jates insisted, though with a bit less force.
Dave knew that was almost entirely true and also not entirely fair, but what could you do? What could he do? His company was on Xandras to support UN DEFCOM's peacekeeping mission, Operation Sunset. The name, at least, was appropriate. The local sun was supposed to be setting on the Verd Chris presence there. The Verds had gotten themselves into the mess by themselves, with, of course, a little encouragement. Not from humanity. UN DEFCOM, back then still called UNEF, had argued against the Verd initiative, urged the lizards not to be reckless, but the Verd Chris, the true Kristang, were tired of waiting. Still, they would not have invaded Xandros if the Ruhar had not encouraged them to take a chance. It would be, the hamsters said at the time, a good opportunity to test tactics, to see whether the Verd Chris message could find traction with a captive population. It was a military solution to a political problem, and it went just as well as expected. That is, as expected by members of military organizations who had been sent somewhere to fix a political problem. Spoiler alert. Not well at all. On paper, Xandras appeared to be a nearly ideal opportunity. An isolated, poverty-stricken Kristang world owned by a weak, minor clan. A world with so few resources, no other clan had bothered to conquer the place for over 1,000 years. During the 1,100 years since the Spotted Frog clan landed there to establish a colony, the planet's population had never grown beyond 2 million lizards. Lack of resources, a harsh climate, and a star that periodically burped searing solar flares had prevented a rapid population growth. Those factors kept the birth rate low, and the constant and vicious fighting within the clan killed off a shocking percentage of the clan members before they could have children. The Verds, eager to spread their philosophy and burning with fever to restore Kristang society to its original glory, had seen Xandras as the key to their goals. An isolated laboratory for testing their message, to develop methods of persuading their depraved, violent cousins to see the error of their ways. The plan had been to invade the planet, establish several colonies that would grow and thrive, showcasing a model Verd Chris society. A successful culture where males and females were equal participants in making decisions, and vicious clan politics was not a daily threat to the lives of everyone. No one, except the Verds, was surprised to see that effort was doomed to failure. The Spotted Frog Clan refused to stay conquered. Offworld clans, not giving a shit about their lowly local cousins, but determined to stamp out the Verdcris threat, provided weapons, other material, and a steady supply of young males eager to prove themselves, hot-headed warriors who might become a problem back home. In the harsh conditions on Xandras, the newly planted Verd colonies failed to thrive, failed even to support themselves. The residents needed constant shipments of food and other basic supplies shipped in from off-world at great expense. The worst development was that more than a handful of young male Verdcris, filled with hormones and no common sense, were seduced by the violent but exciting life of their counterparts in the Spotted Frog Clan and defected to the enemy. The Ruhar quickly grew tired of the effort and expense of supporting the Verds. The Ruhar had encouraged the Verds to invade as a way for the Verds to burn off their missionary zeal harmlessly. Without harm to the Ruhar, that is. The hamsters had gotten what they wanted. They were sick of the expense and distraction of a well-meaning yet failed experiment. So the Verds finally, reluctantly concluded it was time to pull the plug on their misguided adventure on Xandras. They came to that conclusion late, after UNEF and its successor UN DEFCOM had offered 3 times to help the Verds evacuate. By the time the Verds themselves realized they had gotten in way over their scaly heads, humanity was less enthusiastic about helping the stubborn fools. The Ruhar were willing to facilitate the withdrawal, but not at risk to themselves. That is why humans were called in, as neutral peacekeeping observers. A minimum force of human soldiers, backed up by a minimum presence of ships in orbit, was there to assure the Verds withdrew in a peaceful and orderly fashion. The problem was the Kristang had not received that memo. Officially, the Spotted Frog Clan cooperated in Operation Sunset. They wanted the Verds off their planet. But why not take the opportunity to settle a few scores first? To give the Verdcris a bloody nose so they would think twice about messing with the mighty Kristang ever again. Whenever a group of Kristang warriors hit a Verdcris village, whenever a cruise missile exploded in a town square or blew up a hospital, the Spotted Frog Clan leaders denied any responsibility. The perpetrators were hot-headed young warriors, the leaders said with a shrug. Who can control such thugs? The youths of all species were reckless all across the galaxy. The Verds were getting slaughtered before they could be pulled off the surface. The UN DEFCOM force, under the command of Major General Emily Perkins, could not use deadly force unless fired upon. The Ruhar refused to send more transports to the surface until the situation stabilized. The Ruhar ground force, which greatly outnumbered the humans, claimed they couldn't do much without sparking another war between their people and the Kristang. I hear you, Dave repeated. Holding up his hands before Jaitz could say anything more, Dave added, There is nothing we can do directly. That was 100% true. His mercenary force numbered only 200. That was 200 skilled, experienced soldiers. But they couldn't pull a trigger without approval from the local Undick commander, without approval from Dave's wife. And he understood she couldn't give that approval. She had been sent into yet another no-win situation, and command expected her to find a way to succeed, without actually doing anything. Officially. He stood up. I need to talk with Master Sergeant Coulter about something. Stay here, please, and... He glanced around the cluttered container. Try not to break anything while I'm gone, okay? Shauna Coulter, formerly Shauna Jarrett and currently Master Sergeant Coulter, looked up and waved when Dave Chaika caught her eye as he drove what was basically a golf cart toward the base rifle range. Her rifle range, where she trained snipers. Her wave was not enthusiastic, not unfriendly either. Just, there wasn't much to be happy about, not even seeing an old friend. She saw Chaika most every day when she was on base, which was most of the time, to her frustration. Instead of going off base to do something, she and her highly trained, highly motivated team only trained and then did nothing. They trained, she realized, to do nothing. Most of her job was instilling in her snipers a sense that it was more important for them to know when not to shoot, which was most of the time, or all the time, on Xandras. It sucked. A handful of her team deployed to the field could quickly force the asshole lizards to keep their heads down. If they had been allowed to shoot. Hey, Dave, she said as she nodded to her staff sergeant to take over the range. What's up? Nothing. That's the problem. Can we... He tilted his head toward the base supply area,
a jumble of shipping containers that hadn't been sorted out because there was no point to wasting the effort. Talk? Sure. I'm not doing anything that matters. They stepped between containers under the overhang of a stacked box that provided a measure of shade on the scorched world. Shauna was still surprised that anything grew in such harsh conditions. The soil was poor in metals other than iron. There was plenty of iron, too much of it. The dust that was kicked up everywhere by the wind tasted of iron, and everything she ate or drank was tainted by her mouth being coated by iron dust all day. That was why the smallish planet had gravity 12% greater than on Earth, a difference that was noticed immediately. The star's flares blasted the cursed world on average once per decade. Rain only fell when it fell in torrents, washing away soil and most everything stuck to it. Yet life found a way. The plants on Xandris were tough, having evolved tough outer shells that locked in moisture and protected the delicate inner structures from searing radiation. The vegetation, she realized after a couple days, had a weird beauty of its own. Some of the trees looked like they were made of glass and reflected the intense sunlight, so when the tough, tubular leaves swayed in the wind, the light hurt her eyes. Local animal life was also tough, which was why the temporary base was surrounded by an electric fence, and why that fence was supplemented by automated particle cannons with motion sensors. It had taken the deaths of only two peacekeepers to make the rest of the force properly wary of the indigenous wildlife. Hungry beasties on Xandros couldn't get any nutrition from eating humans, but that wouldn't stop them from taking a bite. "You hurt?" she asked. There wasn't any need to detail what she meant. He nodded. "Jade's came to see me. I get the feeling his team will do something on their own if we don't. He has to know that won't accomplish anything. It would be doing something. At this point, that's probably all he cares about. He's not the only one. More of the Verds talked to you about it? They didn't have to. Jates doesn't give a shit what anyone else thinks, but I know he wasn't speaking only for himself. What about the Ruhar? Theirs or mine?" Dave asked. What made his private security company unique, and uniquely valuable, was that he employed humans, Verdcris, and Ruhar. At one point, he had four Torgala on the payroll, but those sanctimonious jerks were universally hated, so he had let their contracts expire. "Yours?" "They're not happy either. At first, I got the impression they didn't shed any tears when the Verds here got hit. But now, they know this shit ain't right. When that Verd school was attacked and all those children were killed, we all saddled up in full battle rattle expecting to be sent into the field. 6 hours later, we got the order to stand down. My Ruhar were more pissed off about it than my Verds were. The Ruhar," he held up his hands, "they can be real patronizing to the Verds, and that's the key. The hamsters on my team don't consider the Verds to be real professional soldiers, so the Ruhar kind of feel like they have to be responsible for them." "You want to do something? That's why you're talking to me?" "I don't know." "Bullshit. I know you. This is eating you up." "It doesn't bother you?" "The entire force hates what's going on. We came here to keep the peace, and we're not doing that. Or doing anything. Em's hands are tied." "I didn't say it was her fault." "Dave," she patted his hand, "you know I don't blame Em for this mess." "She blames herself." He stared at his feet, miserable. "Do you know why Command chose her to lead this clusterfuck? To keep her and the Mavericks from getting into even worse trouble?" "Well, that too," he admitted with a short-lived grin. "Command figured her reputation would keep the lizards here in check, that they wouldn't mess with her given the sketchy stuff she's done in the past. That might have worked, but they tied her hands. Made it clear the UN has a limited appetite for adventures that don't directly serve our strategic interests. That if the Sunset Force here gets into trouble, UNDIC will pull the plug. On this op, and any future support for anything aliens want to pull us into." "Dave, I hate to tell you this, but what you said isn't a secret." He nodded once, sourly. "Yeah, I know. Enough loudmouth politicians back home opposed this op before we launched. They let the lizards know they can get away with anything here and we won't shoot." "What do you want to do about it? You thinking of something your Verds can do?" "Something like that. Em can't be involved. She can't know about it." "What do you want from me?" If I get a really bad idea, I want you to talk me into it. She blinked at him.
You mean talk you out?
I meant what I said. It's something Joe told me that Skippy said to him. Sometimes you need a push from your friends to push the envelope on something. He waved his hands. It didn't say that right.
I get what you mean. Tell me what you're thinking. Unless you're planning to act against the DEFCON force.
That's treason. No way would I do that. Even if I wanted to, UNDIC doesn't have enough boots on the ground to stop the lizards. The Ruhar are the problem. We need to get them into the fight.
How? The hamsters didn't come here to fight.
Their admiral sure doesn't have any authority for a first strike.
Not a first strike.
They could, they would, hit back. If the lizards hit them first. She sucked in a breath.
A false flag operation?
Look, the hamsters have a big pile of ammo at their main base. Crates sitting stacked in the open because they don't expect any trouble, and they don't expect to be here for long. My Ruhar can get access to the base to get a home-cooked meal, something like that. They won't know what they're doing, just visiting friends. They'll bring along a couple of my Verds, probably Jates and a few others. If the Verds can split away for a short time, they can plant explosives on a timer or remotely detonated.
Dave, that won't work. The Ruhar would never believe the lizards could be that stupid.
Because the Kristang have always used good judgment in the past? Come on, Shauna. You read the intel reports. The young warriors who were sent here from other clans are hotheads with no self-control. They want to fight. They need to prove themselves. We intercepted comms that some groups of warriors see their best chance for glory is to hit the Ruhar directly, not fight a sideshow battle against the Verds.
You?
She looked off into the distance where a dropship coming in for landing was kicking up red dust. A cloud of gritty, iron-rich dust would soon be blowing over the entire base.
Might be right about that.
Okay,
except for one thing. The only way to be sure the Ruhar buy that the lizards hit them is if they see it.
See what?
Ordnance inbound.
Missiles.
Whoa. You want me to steal missiles from the lizards and launch them from lizard territory?
Not exactly.
Good. Doing that would be crazy.
The risk is way too high, and the hamsters would knock all those birds out of the sky before they reach the base.
Not if... Before we go on, this only happens if no one gets killed.
The Verds are dying right now, he reminded her.
But yeah, that's why I thought of the ammo dump. It's 3 kilometers from everything else at the base and behind a hill. That was the right answer.
She flashed a smile.
It won't work anyway. My team is good, but we can't conceal an op like this.
You won't have to.
Then who? Dave, you're a businessman. Outsource the job.
To who?
The lizards.
He stared at her.
Unless you know something I don't. There, it's not what I know, it's who. And you know her too.
Her?
Shauna pulled out a Z-phone, tapped a few icons to make a secure private call that UNDIC wouldn't know about.
The call connected to a UN starship in orbit. The assault carrier Flying Dutchman.
Hello, Nagatha?
The next afternoon at the main Ruhar base Dirtside was typically quiet and sleepy. Literally sleepy. That is when most of the base personnel slept. The lizards had been operating at night, so the security forces responsible for protecting the Verdkris also were on alert at night. Not that those security forces would actually do anything. The humans were on Xandras only as observers, more peace watchers and peace hopers than peace keepers. The Ruhar? Their role was to provide transport. They hadn't come to the miserable rock to get into a firefight with insane lizards. A typical, sleepy day. The only break in the routine was the base kitchen preparing a special evening meal in honor of a religious feast day. It was a minor holiday on the Ruhar homeworld, not even a day off work for most people. An excuse for the kitchen crew to cook something other than the monotonous diet that hardly changed from one week to the next. The routine was shattered, first by alarms blaring with the hooga, hooga cadence of an air attack. Barely 4 seconds after the first alarm blared, while experienced soldiers were blearily deciding whether to bother getting out of bed for what had to be another useless fucking drill, came sharp cracks of supersonic somethings passing overhead as the air sizzled with directed energy weapons knocking the unwelcome newcomers out of the sky. That's when the experienced troops moved like lightning. They knew not only that bad shit was happening for real, it was desperately bad shit. The air defense cannons were emplaced in several rings around the base perimeter, providing defense and depth. In an air attack, you were supposed to hear that sizzle before hearing the sound of enemy ordnance flying overhead. The air defense cannons had swiveled around and were shooting into the air over the base. Somehow, enemy missiles had penetrated the defenses not by concentrating in one narrow lane to saturate the defenses there, and not by first sending dedicated missiles to knock out the particle cannons. The Kristang missiles had snuck through the defenses. All of the networks of sophisticated sensors on the ground, in the air, and in orbit had missed detecting a cloud of missiles that could be seen by looking out a fucking window. Zzz, boom, zzz, boom, zzz, boom. The defenses, reacting quickly to the disaster, were knocking missiles out of the sky, the air over the base crackling with raw energy. Missiles exploded as they were struck by hellish energy. Not every missile suffered from premature explodilation. The initial explosion of the ammo dump was not actually heard. It was just a wall of air pressure that overwhelmed biological hearing. The eruption was felt as a supersonic shockwave of air, then by the ground groaning and heaving. As the shockwave passed outward, clearing the base perimeter, secondary explosions sounded individually, munitions cooking off one by one or in random groups. Stunned soldiers, having had no time to get to safety, picked themselves up off the trembling floors, looked out the windows and doors of their barracks, and asked no one in particular what the fuck just happened. There was no immediate satisfactory answer. There sure as hell would be, the soldiers told each other with grim determination, a satisfactory response. The lizards would pay. Within an hour of the ammo dump exploding, the leaders of the Spotted Frog Clan had denied any responsibility for the attack. Careful analysis of sensor data indicated the missiles had been launched from an underground bunker neither humans nor Ruhar had known about. A huge intelligence miss by itself. Yes, the clan leaders admitted, the bunker was in their territory less than 2 kilometers from the temporary border, but clearly on their side of the imaginary line. Yes, it was their bunker, they admitted reluctantly. No, they had not authorized any such foolish and even counterproductive attack. The launch must have been conducted by rogue actors, hot-headed young warriors eager to make a name for themselves. Surely the Ruhar Admiral could not blame the leaders of the Spotted Frogs for a handful of reckless jackasses, could he? The Ruhar Admiral's answer was in the form of a frigate's railguns pounding a senior clan leader's compound from orbit, leaving a smoking crater. At that point, the other senior clan leaders shrugged and told each other, "Fuck it, we might as well fight back." The Verdkris population would no longer be undefended. Valkyrie flew out to the rendezvous point where Skippy was transferring to the activation command ship Copernicus. While we waited for a dropship to be prepared for Skippy, I talked with him. Actually went into his escape pod man cave, which was still filled with Elvis memorabilia. It warmed my heart to see the Velpy I made for him was still there also. That was the painting of Skippy on a black velvet canvas. "Well, this is nice," he announced after we had been talking for 10 minutes. He said it the way people do when the conversation lags and they can't think of anything to talk about. "It is," I agreed. "Hey, what was a safe subject to talk about that wouldn't send him on a rant?" "You named the first 3 Sentinels Roscoe, Bubba, and Pup-Tart." "I did. Yeah, the UN staff is just thrilled about having a homeworld protected by a giant killing machine called Bubba. It is a heartless killing machine, Joe. I named it Bubba to soften its image." "Uh-huh. And not to amuse yourself by screwing with monkeys?" "Well, that too." "Have you selected a name for this new one that will be guarding the Rindaloo homeworld?" "Yes," he was excited. "I figure this new one should have a reputation for being especially fierce, so the rotten kitties won't be tempted to test its defenses."
"That's a good idea. So you named it Crusher? Something like that?"
"What? No, it's a pet, Joe, not a machine.
I am naming it Dogzilla.
Wow, that is an, inspired name.
Damn, I felt sorry for the overworked UN public relations staff who would have to translate that name for the Rindaloo.
I heard that you not only designed the ships that transmit the signal to contact a sentinel, you had to invent a new material for the transmitters?
A new element, Joe. An exotic element. It's based on rhenium, but the subatomic particles it is constructed of are artificial, so the new element has properties very different from an ordinary transition metal.
Your stupid monkey scientists call it radonium because they think it is used to build a cross-dimensional radio.
Well, that makes sense, right?
It does not. The transmitters are not radios. They don't use photons at all. I wanted to call the new element Skipton, like Krypton, but much cooler. Get it?
Hey, maybe you could talk to the UN Science Directorate. Get them to change the...
I am not asking the United Nations to name an element after you.
Why not? He demanded. I invented the stupid thing.
You have... My phone beeped. The dropship was ready.
Darn it, time to go.
I'll carry you to the docking bay, if that's okay with you.
If you insist.
Lifting him in the foam cradle that encased the bottom half of his shiny canister, I tucked him under an arm and ducked my head to squeeze through the hatch.
Ah, this reminds me of old times, he sighed as I strode along the passageway, his avatar floating in the air in front of me.
Yeah, it does.
To be clear, those old times sucked.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, he sniffed. At least we agree on that.
Him leaving the battlecruiser meant, thank God, he would be Admiral Mancini's problem for a while.
Hey, Skippy, behave yourself over there, please.
Joe, it's me.
Exactly.
What do you know about Mancini with the activation fleet?
I've never heard of him. What combat experience does he have?
He?
Why do you assume Admiral Mancini is a he, Joe?
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Sorry,
what combat experience does she have?
His first name is Roberto.
Then why?
Whatever. He has no combat experience.
Huh.
That is not... Activating a sentinel is not a combat situation, dum-dum. If it ever devolves into combat, you monkeys will get squashed flat. Mancini was selected for his technical expertise. He worked with me on the initial project to develop the cross-dimensional transmitters. Without those things, none of this would be happening.
I get that.
Do you?
Not everything in the military has to involve smashing things.
Right. Only the fun stuff involves smashing things. You are hopeless. He threw up his hands.
I'm pretty good at smashing stuff, you know? It's kind of my core competency.
He snorted. Amusing me is your core competency.
That too.
I'm sure your boys will miss me terribly, so remember, I left a submind to continue their education.
Uh-huh. I appreciate that.
The moment the star carrier burdened with Copernicus jumped away, I planned to ask Bilby to erase that stupid educational submind. Besides, the boys had no time for Uncle Skippy. They were way too busy being entertained by Valkyrie's crew. Of the entire crew, the only person I knew was Colonel Reed. She was scheduled to move on to another command after the ship went into a refit that would take 2 months. By that point, none of Valkyrie's crew would be from the Merry Band of Pirates. That was sad, and I guess it was progress. Life goes on, right?
Yeah, that's BS. For me, it was just sad. That's another reason it might be time for me to retire.
To keep me from getting bored in retirement, there were multiple opportunities that did not involve playing golf or pickleball. The Verge had offered me a job as a consultant on military strategy. Yeah, that is more BS. The real reason they offered me a job was they hoped my reputation for accomplishing the impossible would make their enemies hesitate to act if I was advising their commanders. Were they right about that? I hope they never had to find out the truth. There were also the usual offers for me to serve on corporate boards of directors, though those offers included the unspoken expectation that I would keep my mouth shut and vote however the rest of the board wanted me to.
Screw it. It's not like I needed the money. My pay was still largely in savings.
Skippy supposedly had also set aside a pension for me as president of his fake country if I trusted the sneaky little shithead with my future finances. Which I did not, thank you very much.
Okay, well, have fun, and I'll see you when the Whatsis is ready.
The Whatsis?
You know what I mean.
You meant to say the horribly complicated and frighteningly expensive apparatus that allows me to reach into higher space-time to not only directly contact the matrix of a sentinel, I can also reprogram it so it won't instinctively wipe out all of you meat sacks?
Yeah, that. Like I said.
Do you have any idea how much your United Nations spent to develop this technology?
Well, I know it wasn't my money, so...
Hopeless.
He was right that the project had consumed a mind-boggling amount of money. So much that funding for the UN Navy had been cut back and the expeditionary force refashioned into a force that didn't go on expeditions at all. Earth could either afford a shiny new sentinel or a mobile force that could be sent on dangerous missions of dubious value across the galaxy. As a career soldier, I hate to say it, but once our homeworld was protected by an invincible defender, we had less need for warships and mech boots that could be planted on the ground. Having a large mobile military sometimes means that politicians find it too easy to employ a military solution to every problem. The era when humanity was desperately fighting to avoid extinction was over, and the justification for reckless cowboys like me was also over. Command was now focused on avoiding getting into trouble. That meant reining in people like me who had the power to screw everything up all by themselves. As a father of two children with one on the way, I had to think of that as a good thing. Truly, I did. I'm getting too old for cowboy shit anyway. Skippy left, then the star carrier with Copernicus jumped away. Instead of following the activation fleet directly to the Oyster Nebula, Reed took Valkyrie out to meet the third fleet. Rear Admiral Sousa was a one-star officer, and I flew over to his flagship to pay my respects and to let him know I would stay out of his way. His staff gave me a tour of the battleship Rio Grande, a former Rindaloo warship that had been extensively modified for a human crew. Being polite, I did not remind anyone that ship was a UN Navy asset only because I had ordered Roscoe to seize it, along with other Rindaloo and Maxalt ships, as prizes of war. Or to use the correct legal term, those ships were compensation for injuries inflicted on humanity by the spiders. Whatever. We took the damn things, they were ours now. Lawyers on both sides will likely be arguing over the details for centuries. The Third Fleet's role was protection of the Activation Fleet, which had the temporary designation as the 17th Fleet. As a military force, Mancini's 17th was weak, its ships barely able to defend themselves. Hell, a determined Cristang squadron could have blown apart the activation ships, but nothing the Lizards had could match the capabilities of those marvelous activation transmitter ships. No other species possessed ships that could reach across multiple layers of space-time. Even the Rindaloo did not understand the basic principles of the things. Okay, yes, filthy monkeys also did not understand how the things worked, or exactly what the machines did. Skippy had designed the mechanisms, but even the awesomely arrogant beer can admitted it had taken clever monkeys to make his half-baked theories work. Every time one of the frighteningly expensive tests had failed, Skippy protested that no one had ever done anything like what he was trying to do, and that it would all be worth the effort in the end. He was correct. All the money and work had paid off. Humanity now had two fully capable sentinels protecting our main inhabited planets. The bean counters in the treasury departments of UN member nations could grumble all they wanted. No one looking at the sky and seeing the dim outline of a tame elder killing machine doubted that having the ultimate protection was a very good thing.